My name's Chris Kirk, and this is TW Talks, the interviews podcast from 3 Weeks Edinburgh. I'm sitting in the Assembly Club bar with the Edinburgh Fringe happening all around me, talking to some of our favourite Fringe performers who have shows at this year's festival. Today, Max Fulham, whose main show at the Fringe, he has some others, but the main one is called Memory Phone. It's on at the Pleasance Dome. Let's get TW talking to Max. So I am still here in the Assembly Club bar. People are joining me to talk about their shows at this year's Edinburgh Festival. Max Fulham has now joined me. Thank you for getting up early and joining me to come. Although you have to get up early because you've got a show happening quite soon.
I do, yes. I do have to get up early. But yes, this is an early morning for me. But thank you for having me.
You've got lots of stuff going on at this year's Fringe, so we will talk through that. But the format is past, present, future. So
yep.
Before we get to the present, before we get to this year's Edinburgh Festival, let's talk about your journey through comedy. But you're not just a comedian.
No.
You have another talent that we're here to talk about. So it's a ventriloquism show.
Yes.
But also very funny.
Thank you. I hope so.
So we can definitely, you don't need your own section in the programme.
Yes.
You can definitely go in the comedy section.
Phew, what a relief.
So talk us through the journey. If you had to pick a moment when you began this journey, what is there a moment that you would identify?
I suppose I must have made someone laugh as a child and then went, oh, that felt really great. But then the real moment would have been when my parents bought me a puppet for Christmas one year and... little did they know. They weren't giving me it in a sort of go, make a career, child. It was just a gift. And it's gone from there, really.
So how young were you?
I was about 9 years old.
Okay.
And then from then, I was practicing in front of my bedroom mirror. There was a little worn patch of carpet where I spent all my time in front of the mirror, practicing away. And eventually, over the years, I probably got half decent. And then it sort of went from there, really.
So in terms of the ventriloquism song, because I guess when you were given the puppet, was the assumption you were going to teach yourself to do that? Because you don't have to do that in order to just
The assumption was there's a toy, Merry Christmas, not make something of yourself.
And in terms of that kind of performance, had you experienced that? Were you aware? I'm trying to think, there have been various points in British history where there have been famous ventriloquists who are on TV a lot, sometimes aimed at kids and sometimes not. But I'm trying to think with your... Maybe there wasn't... I guess probably Nina Conti was on the rise, but not for kids.
I wish I was of an era where I could say, oh, I saw such and such at the Theatre Royal, blah, blah. But I didn't. I saw something on YouTube. And literally, I was puppet obsessed. And I used to sort of type puppet into Google and search every website I could and stumbled on YouTube and found all these videos of people doing puppetry. And then, eventually, I found someone who was doing the puppetry while stood next to the puppet. And I was like, well, that's cool. I'll do that. In that sort of very childlike way where you don't have any inhibitions, you just go, yeah, I'll do that, I'll give that a go, I'll do that. So I don't think, if I came to ventriloquism as an adult, I don't think I'd have the patience to even attempt that, never mind the sort of the willingness to put aside any self-consciousness of looking like an absolute idiot for a good while. So thankfully, lack of inhibitions and childhood play sort of meant that I started practicing this and now it's given me a job, essentially.
So was there a Google search or a YouTube search where it was like, okay, I've seen this thing called ventriloquism on YouTube, how do I do it?
I didn't really follow any tutorials. I definitely taught myself in my bedroom. People often ask me, is there a school for it? No, of course there's not a school for it. What are you thinking? No.
You're suggesting there's not enough demand to fill up
college? I'd be the student and the teacher. It's stupid. There's not school, there's books and stuff. I suppose I came to the books and the tutorials and all that later after I'd sort of found what I was doing and found that, oh, that's a bit different to how I do it. That's a bit different or that's the same. I agree with that. I disagree with that. It is about finding your own technique, I suppose.
And so this was a hobby initially.
Mm-hmm.
And at what point did it become a hobby? It was like, you know what? I want to do this in front of other people.
Well, I have just always loved making people laugh. And so any opportunities I got to do that, like I really loved an assembly
by which we had a school assembly rather than the assembly that we're in here in the
rather end. Than the assembly we're in here right now. I mean, they're great too, but I loved an assembly at school.
Did your fellow students enjoy you enjoying assembly?
I hope so. I hope so. I think if they didn't, I wasn't aware.
Yeah.
Slash was too sort of busy getting on with my practice to really understand what they were thinking about me. And I went to school in Scotland, just outside Edinburgh. And so I don't sound like I did, but that's where I grew up. And there was like a really healthy culture of like the arts and stuff and nurturing that. And I think sort of early visits to the Fringe as a kid will have no doubt be the reason I do what I do today. Like I watched street performers and saw variety on the streets. I mean, that's where I saw these things for the first time. Yeah, so assemblies, all of that. Then by the age of 12, I was doing kids' parties. Like I was my Saturday job essentially was doing kids' parties, then, you know, old folks' homes and stuff like that. And then by the time sort of 16, 17 came around, I was considering doing this properly, took a gap year, and ended up cancelling my place at uni, which was not my plan, but I had enough in the diary that I was then full time, which is quite unusual.
So you were gifted this puppet that started this whole journey.
Mm-hmm.
How quickly, once you were sort of performing, particularly once you were performing at kids' parties and things like that, were you like, actually, I don't just have a puppet, I want to bring other characters in?
Oh yeah, I mean, I accumulated a whole cast of ridiculous things over the years. Yeah, I was always buying puppets with whatever money I was always, but I still am. It's ridiculous. The amount of puppets I have is, I would describe it as bordering on a Channel 5 documentary at this point. It's not healthy. I had a whole sort of cast of characters, and then slowly but surely, as I sort of matured and sort of treated like a proper job, they developed into, I mean, some of them have sort of not been on stage for a good while, but they slowly developed into characters that I now use more often. Yeah.
Beyond doing the kids' parties and entertaining other masters, you were a child at the time.
I was a child.
Children. Yeah. You then become a little bit older than that audience.
Yeah.
But in terms of taking, I guess, ventriloquism back in the day, it's the kids' side of it's really obvious. That's their sense. But in terms of then turning it into a comedy show that's aimed at adults, at what point did that become part of your objective?
I had a lot of experience performing for family audiences then. I'd done my first few pantomimes and stuff like that. And I love that audience. I think it's an amazing audience, but I'd always loved, you know, I'd been watching stand-up at the Fringe since I was a child. And I always wanted to do the club. So I was like, oh, I want to do a comedy club. I want to do this thing and sort of move and pivot into that area. And I'd done gigs for adult audiences, but it had been sort of like squeaky clean.
Yeah.
Partly because of my age, but, you know. And then, yeah, over those few years, sort of from 18 onwards, started to do the clubs. And so now they're sort of a mainstay of what I do.
By that point, I guess on the sort of the family entertaining kids stuff,
yeah,
you were used to doing your own show.
Yeah.
How did it then compare to, I guess, when you're starting on the comedy circuit, of you're coming in to do your 5 minutes, your 10 minutes?
That's lovely. Oh, it's delightful. Oh, to not have the pressure of a full 45 to an hour on your shoulders. Oh, rock in for 20 minutes. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, please. Really, really nice. I do sort of sometimes feel a weird guilt that I didn't necessarily come to the clubs through the usual route.
Yes, you didn't do the 3 minute, 5 minute, open mic.
Five, 10. I sort of went in with, I think I went in at a 10 and then fairly soon after was doing 20s. But I suppose, to counteract the sort of guilt I feel around about not doing the process, I was slogging it doing other gigs that were difficult in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing family shows in some really tricky venues, really sort of cutting my teeth in quite an old school way. I think that's partly because I was a variety act in many ways. And yeah, it's I have to reassure myself, I've paid my dues.
You allude to this in the show, but I guess, particularly when it comes to the adult audience, sometimes ventriloquism has a bit of an image problem. Would that be fair?
A bit. I had a 4-star review the other day, a very good review, 4-star review that started, Max Fulham is almost from a different era. And that's 4 stars. Fulham is a ventriloquist. Yeah, like derogatory. It totally does have an image problem. As soon as you've got a puppet on your hand, people make a lot of assumptions and not just about your personal life. But yeah, it does. It has a massive image problem. I'm not always convinced that is a public image problem. I think a lot of people are willing to put that aside. Sometimes it's a critical image problem,
yeah,
to be, and I know exactly who I'm talking to, but sometimes it is a critical image problem that they can't get past that. I mean, I remember sort of the debut show last year, sometimes it felt like people had come in fully with a fully formed idea of what they were about to see. And
I guess that's interesting, because, you know, I get, you don't go to a stand-up comedian expecting them to be exactly like the last stand-up comedian you saw. Whereas maybe because of so many fewer ventriloquists, it's like, I saw a ventriloquist when I was X.
Yeah.
And therefore the show must be exactly the same.
Absolutely. Yeah. You do not get someone having watched a stand-up comedian they don't like coming to the conclusion they don't like comedy. Whereas after a show, I will rate, like, evening spots at the Fringe, especially, I'm getting this on the door, people coming out saying, oh, I hate ventriloquism, but I really enjoyed that. And I just want to say to them, maybe you don't hate ventriloquism. Maybe
just some ventriloquism.
Maybe you last saw it in the 1980s.
Yeah.
Maybe you haven't seen it for a while. So, yeah, I think because of what I do, I am lumped in under an umbrella of a thing rather than an individual, like other comedians would be. You'd list them as individuals, whereas I am seen as puppet boy. yeah, so it is interesting, yeah. And it can be a difficult sell for that reason, I think, is because people have so many preconceptions about what they're about to watch. And hopefully, you know, I see the audience reviews, people saying things like, oh, you should come along even if you don't like ventriloquists, or I knew there was puppets involved and I nearly didn't come, but I'm glad I did. And it's like, great, I'm turning them one by one. This is not a challenge that other people have to overcome, but for a ventriloquist, yes, it is.
I mean, you mentioned earlier, I think, that it's, although yours is a comedy show, although it's also a kid show, but this word variety, the variety show.
Dirty word. Dirty word.
Is another thing. I still think there might be a comeback for the variety show, mainly because of no one having an attention span, no one being able to focus on anything for more than 10, 20 minutes. Surely the solution to that is, let's get a variety show touring.
Yeah.
Everyone does their 10, 12 minutes. Your ventriloquist, a trapeze artist, a singer, a comedian.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe,
but
it's
then,
time for a comeback.
At the same time, you can argue that the comeback is happening, but because we're not labelling variety,
yeah,
no one's looking at it. You look at the likes of Stamptown. That's a variety show.
Yeah.
You look at the likes of Mr. Thing. They are a TV variety show on stage. And these things are incredibly successful, but because they are so modern and have repackaged it, the general public aren't sniffing out the variety show element, and therefore not noticing that and judging it with the same standard.
Yeah.
They judge something that is labelled variety.
Yeah. And I guess here at The Fringe, it's slightly less of a problem now that we're all on the app and the website. Sort of,
the app? Is that working for you now? Is it? Hasn't worked for me since day one.
My point still stands,
right?
Even if you're getting that face that tells you it's not working. The Fringe splits the shows into the strands, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Comedy, cabaret, yeah, theatre, etc. And I guess there are lots of things where it's like, well, I don't really belong in any of those. And actually, you could have a variety strand, but no one would want to go in it for the reason you've just
described. No, absolutely. And a lot of that comes under the cabaret brand.
But even with cabaret, I think people often think either burlesque or maybe drag or maybe,
yeah, absolutely,
singing. Whereas the cabaret can be so much more than that.
And like you talked about sort of the idea of fitting in, I'm often thinking about Venn diagrams and myself within a Venn diagram, because I do a lot of cabaret stuff. I do a lot of work in cabaret, you know, alongside brilliant burlesque acts and stuff like that, as well as comedy clubs. And it's a weird thing of, you don't quite fit. You're on the fringes of a Venn diagram in a comedy club walking in with a suitcase. And you're also on the fringes of a cabaret gig walking in with a suitcase and not doing that sort of stuff. So I'm sort of on the edges of all of these circles, which is nice to have fingers in different pies. But it's a very interesting place to be. For me personally, like, I see ventriloquism purely as like the vehicle for the comedy. The comedy is the main thing. If I didn't have ventriloquism, I'd still be doing comedy. But I do have ventriloquism and I'm doing comedy. And that is the sole aim is laughter. I'm not there to sing a song.
That sort of segues into my next question. So let's come on to this year's shows. So actually, yeah, there were two and a half shows.
No, two and a half
this
shows.
Year. Although by the time this podcast goes out, one of them will either be about to finish or it's finished.
Rest in haste.
So that was the children's show in,
yes,
the morning. But then the evening show, which sits in the comedy section.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, when you watch it, obviously you have various puppets and other objects.
Indeed.
In the show.
Yeah.
You're telling a story and there's all the jokes and the comedy stuff. And it's a cliche question, but kind of what comes first? Do you start with, oh, well, I've got these puppets I want to use.
Yep.
This is how I'm going to use them. Or is it actually, no, I've got a story to tell. I've got jokes to tell. And what objects do I need to employ?
Both and all of those things. So it has an existing character for me, my granddad. And I'm very aware that sort of an old man is a very stereotypical ventriloquism character. And I sort of play with that through the show, as well as other characters that are brand new for this year. And they've come out of the woodwork in a combination of ways. There's a character called Charity Shop Puppet, who is a puppet that's been around loads of charity shops. The idea came first, and then I found the right puppet for it. And
you find that, do you get them made, or do you just, is there a puppet shop?
That one, I was like, I need a puppet that looks a little bit shoddy. And so I had one already. I was like, I've got one somewhere. I know for a fact. So I was looking through all the sort of bags and drawers and boxes and cupboards, looking for a puppet that's a bit rubbish. And I was like, it's perfectly naff.
Yeah.
Because it's so simple. I wanted something that was very flexible so that I could really manipulate it perfectly. Yeah. So it's a brilliant puppet, but it serves the exact purpose I wanted. I wanted a really simple puppet. Other things, you know, I have the idea, then either make myself, like there's some talking paintings, some talking portraits, and then other things I'll have made by other people as well. Have I had anything custom made for this show? Puppet wise, I don't. Oh no, there are a few. There's a few sort of bit part characters that have been custom made, quite uniquely this time. There's a genuine antique in this show, 100-year-old puppet head that I had restored, is now taking on the guise of, I mean, not too many spoilers, a sort of public figure TV personality that bears no resemblance in any way to the puppet that he's represented by. And so I can't even tell you how that came about, because that's just a collision of weirdness. But yeah, it's nice to have sort of puppets that I've already got, new puppets, old puppets, puppets that I've found, puppets that I've had made, and also puppets that I'm bringing back to the stage because they're really old. So this show is the most mixture of those things I've ever had.
When you're planning out the show, are you thinking, I need to have a puppet with me pretty much from beginning to end, or are you thinking, actually, no, there can be bits where I'm just doing the comedy,
not
and the storytelling?
I love doing stuff without puppets. I also really love doing ventriloquism without the puppets as well. I think it's a really nice thing. Like in my debut show last year, I did a whole extended section talking to a supermarket self-checkout, and then the cross dialogue between her and the shop assistant, and there was nothing on stage with me at that point. And so I really like that, because it demonstrated the ventriloquism, that illusion that tricking our brain still works. And everyone is following and seeing what I'm seeing on stage, even though there's nothing in the space. So I like that. And this year is sort of similar. There's some ventriloquism without puppets. There is stuff that is just me. There's more stand-up-y stuff. So yeah, it's a real combination, just because, once again, it's all a vehicle for the comedy. And you want to sort of plot the peaks and troughs on a graph. You don't always want to be stood there with a puppet on your arm, because one of the things I realized was, talking about old school variety, is that if you put a ventriloquist act in a silhouette, like drag often talks about silhouettes in terms of the costumes and stuff and what silhouette you're casting, and I thought about ventriloquism in the silhouette of it, and it has not changed since the Victorian times. You could put a ventriloquist act in a silhouette and you would see the table with the puppet with the person standing next to him. And so I was like, well, that needs to change. I need to have a show that, at least for some of it, I'm not in this typical silhouette, so that even subconsciously people are going, oh, this doesn't look like what we are associating ventriloquism with.
You're also doing a late night show where you're one of four.
Yes. It's called An Hour of Headline Comedy, and it's a real treat. It's a light. I feel like it's great because I'm on a lineup with really great ass. It's lovely. It's really nice. And also, I do a double act by myself, so I get to see real people every day, which is lovely. So Amy Matthews is hosting. She is phenomenal and also very lovely. Josh Glantz, who I've admired for years, and Gareth Waugh, who just knocks it out of the park every single night. So I get to share a bill with them, which is really lovely.
And going back to our original conversation, I guess with your show, people have they specifically come see your show. And
yeah, that's
nice,
isn't it?
They might have the, I don't like ventriloquism, but...
Yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
But I guess with that show, people, I imagine, although all your faces are on the publicity, a lot of people just come along for a late night show.
Well, exactly.
Don't know what they're getting.
And they also don't necessarily know I do ventriloquism. So yes, there is that. I do have to, in much the same way as I approach a club set, there are lines and jokes and methods that I have for sort of breaking that tension initially, because I walk onto the stage with a bag and people are like, what's going on now? I hope it's not magic. So there's that. I sort of have to deal. You have to deal with that, but I'm approaching that in much the same way as I'd approach a club.
Yeah. In your main show, there's a bit of audience participation.
Yeah, there is.
If you remember, when I came to your show, I ended up doing that.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So here's a good question.
At least now
point.
I know you for future years.
And you can therefore use me as an example. What happens, you pick someone randomly out of the crowd, usually based on that they're sitting somewhere.
Yeah, not too randomly. I've sort of, the choosing time is quite carefully placed in the show so that they there's about 12 minutes have gone by the time, so I'm sort of gauging reactions and placement of people. So I do choose someone, yeah.
And what happens if, for example, maybe if some reviewer ends up getting picked, they sort of screw up what you want them to do?
You didn't screw up anything.
No, I was quite good on the chimes.
You didn't screw up anything.
But it could happen.
It absolutely could happen. A lot of it, if you screw, I mean, there's a set of chimes in the show, and I just need an audience member to dingle on the chimes.
I could do that.
You were very good at it. You were so good at it.
Less so at the assistant puppeteering.
But... No, they were perfect at that. This is the thing, you're perfect at that, because that needs to be imperfect.
Of course, to be funny, yeah.
And so similarly with the chimes, whatever they do is totally valid and workable.
And you can work around it.
And if they're no good, it's sort of fine. It can be worked with. And I'm a terrible audience member. Like, I don't love audience participation. So I always try and, whilst I do want to use people, I always want to do it in a sort of the kindest way possible. I mean, obviously, they're going to get a bit of ribbing if they are being used. But at the same time, you've got to keep the comedy going.
But at the same time, it makes it a better show.
Yeah,
so they're
totally
helping you make it a better show.
They totally are helping me. And it's been a really nice vibe with the audience participation. I really hope you felt that as well. Like, I only try and do it with a kindness. And actually, the reaction that you or the volunteer gets at the end after what they've helped me with.
Yeah.
Quite amazing. Like the cheer is like people are like, yeah, because you're like a hero because you've created quite a ridiculous moment on stage, and it's essentially been at your hand.
Yeah,
I've been doing very little to create that last moment, and the audience member's done it, and the reaction is so genuine from the audience, they go nuts for it. And so the person who started out sort of nervously holding a set of chimes by the end is a hero and walks out of the room, you know, held over on shoulders essentially. Yeah.
Let's talk future. So last year, just the one show?
Yes, it was my debut year last year.
And this year, 2.5.
Yes.
2.25, I guess, technically.
Yeah.
Is Edinburgh now in your calendar? For the next few years, it's going to be their new show?
I'm going to view it as exponential. So I'm doing 7 shows. In all honesty, I don't know. I've got this thing in my head that, of course, I feel like I need to do a hat trick of shows. I need to do 3 shows, 3 in a row.
The trilogy.
3 years. Yeah. But I did...
of the evening shows, I guess, because technically for the kids show, you've done
it. That was the debut this year.
Yeah.
And I have really enjoyed that. And also it functioned because this is another thing. You put a poppet on a poster and people think it's for kids.
Yeah.
And so having a family show that can funnel that audience there is really useful as well. And it gives a really nice space for that to breathe, because it is a family show in the utmost sense that there are adult laughs as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's for everyone. I don't know. Earlier on in the year, in the process of putting together, I was like, I don't have to do a third year. I don't have to do a third year. But at the same time, I'm going, I really feel like that. I feel like I should do a third year.
All good things coming through.
But then last September, after my debut year, I went, there's no way I'm going to be able to come up with a new show. There is literally no, I've put everything I have into this debut year. And then here I am having done 2 new shows.
Yeah.
So I think at the moment, of course, I'm feeling similar. Like, there's no ideas left in my body. There's nothing left. But we'll see what happens. I love the Fringe with all my heart. So. Yeah. I'll be back at some point. If it's next year, if it's another year, I don't know, but I will be back, and I love it.
Finally, is the plan to go and perform this show elsewhere now?
I'd love to. It's going to 2 places.
So far,
yeah. So far, yeah. So it's going to Southampton is going to the Mayflower Studios, because I did pantomime there last year, so it's really lovely to be able to bring my solo shows there and have an audience for it. It's also going to Winchester, because Winchester got in touch, and that's lovely, and I can take the family show and the adult show and do two in a day, which is really nice. I would love to do my first tour. There's no plans yet, but I would love to do my first tour.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's just quickly do the listings on your show and the...
How exciting. Show. Let's do it. Here we are. I'm just going to roll them off, am I? Here we go. So Max Fulham Memory Foam is at the Pleasance Dome in Jack Dome at 7 o'clock every night, except for the 17th, which is Monday, and probably this might not go out.
Who knows?
Right, fine.
But as we record this, that's in the future.
Cool. And then the other one is 1 hour of headline comedy. That is over at Just the Tonic Nucleus, so literally just up the road from the Pleasance Courtyard, prime location. And that is at 22:15 every night, apart from the 18th.
All right, you're into the 24-hour clock. And finally...
I did.
Where can people find you online?
You can find me at Max Fulham on some of the socials and at Max Fulham Comedy, where that username was not available.
Okay, maybe Google can help you.
Oh, around. Google's free.
Which one to go where? Thank you for joining us. Have a good rest of festival.
Thank you so much.